happy to announce that the Fretboard Journal now has three presenting sponsors. These are three brands that are behind us with everything that we do, including the podcasts and the videos, and they include Carter Vintage. Carter Vintage Guitars, where guitar lovers go for a good time. Gibson Guitars, only a Gibson is good enough. And last but not least, Martin Guitars. Martin Guitars and Strings remain the choice for musicians around the world for their unrivaled quality, craftsmanship, and tone. Can't thank these three brands enough for being presenting sponsors. Thank you, guys. Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I'm Jason Verlinde, the editor of the Fretboard Journal magazine. And as always, that is John Rauhaus playing in the background. Today on the podcast, I'm talking to someone whom I hope is a familiar face for at least some of you, Joan Shelley. Joan graced the cover of the Fretboard Journal's 39th issue in a story that I was lucky enough to write. And she has a new record out right now, comes out August 30th, 2019, called Like the River Loves the Sea, and it is another amazing Joan Shelley record. Formula doesn't change a whole lot from what she has been known for. I guess the interesting twist here is that it's Joan Shelley and Nathan Salzberg and Will Oldham for a little bit, and they're all in Iceland. They recorded this album in Iceland, which seems like an unlikely spot to record a album of acoustic guitar songs, but Joan explains it all, and it's a great chat. I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you'll check out her record. Before we get to that, I have to give a shout out to our pals over at Mono Cases. My love affair with my Mono Vertigo gig bag has not waned at all since I first brought it up. If you are using an uncomfortable gig bag out there, or just something that you feel like offers lousy protection for your cherished guitars, I urge you to try a Mono bag. They are so cool. They are sponsoring this podcast and a lot of the other things we're doing here at the magazine. And I had no idea how comfortable a gig bag could be, nor how helpful it could be in terms of having all the right pockets and all the right spots for everything. So check it out and everything else they do over at monocreators.com. The cool thing about Mono, in addition to guitar bags, they also have laptop bags, pedal board bags. They've got all sorts of stuff. So see what they're up to, because they're always unveiling new stuff over at monocreators.com. Before we get to our interview, a few updates. As some of you know, I've been in the middle of a move personally. I've been driving all over Puget Sound lately, racking up miles on my car, moving stuff around. But here at the magazine, we are putting our finishing touches on our 45th issue, and it is going to be spectacular. And to lead up to that, we're going to be doing something different for the next couple of weeks. We are having our first ever subscription drive. So what does that mean? This is not going to be PBS. We're not going to change our regular programming to urge you to give us money. But we are going to be sharing some of our favorite stories from the magazine, some things that you have never seen, some incredibly cool videos that you definitely have never seen, and a lot more over the next couple of weeks, with the goal of being that we would love for you to subscribe to the magazine. We're also going to have some special perks if you want some added bonus stuff beyond just the magazine itself. But the easiest way to support us is just to subscribe to us. Go to fretboardjournal.com, click on that subscribe tab. We have both print and discounted digital subscriptions going. And as a reader-supported magazine, you guys are really what keeps the lights on. And more importantly, the more subscribers we have, the faster we can grow and do all sorts of other cool projects that we have on our whiteboard here that we keep staring at. Our hope is that in the next few weeks, we can get 1,000 new subscribers, which is a bit of a stretch goal, but I think we can do it because we know just how many thousands of you are listening to this podcast who haven't subscribed. So go to fretboardjournal.com, see all of our new content. We're going to be unveiling it on a near daily basis, both on our website and on our social media platforms. And tell your friends, encourage your guitar buddies to join us. And everybody's going to start off with that 45th issue if they subscribe now, and it will be fantastic. All right, with all of that out of the way, here's my chat with Joan Shelley. Again, the album is called Like the River Loves the Sea. It's on No Quarter Records, and it is amazing. Well, Joan, you went from recording at the Wilco Loft with Jeff Tweedy to Iceland. That was the first thing I noticed. This record definitely doesn't sound like a super big departure, but the thought of recording in Iceland to me sounds like a big departure. What was the thought there?
Well, I have a friend who was working at the time for the studio Greenhouse, And that's where one of my favorite Bonnie Prince Billy records was recorded, The Letting Go. And so he was working there, and he knew the studio was open, and he's a big booster for Iceland. He's like, everyone needs to come here and figure this place out. It's so great. And he said he had an opening where we could have the studio for a few days for free. So we took that up. And I've always wanted to go. The one time I'd been there had been when I had a cold at the end of a tour, so it wasn't really awesome. But this looked like a good chance, so that's why we ended up so far from home.
I know Iceland tries to promote itself with cheap airfare to Europe all the time, and KEXP here in Seattle has a great relationship with the people of Iceland and the music scene there. But you haven't you didn't really have a whole lot of experience there, it sounds like.
No, I had known some of the musicians, Jofreda is her name, and I think their band, there was a band, Samaris, I don't know how they say it. It's not Samurais, but it's like closely spelled to that. And I had heard them in different contexts, and I really liked that. But it was very like, you know, technology heavy and really beautiful looped clarinets and stuff, and was intriguing to see them as like her. Oh, I met her in Ireland actually, but to hear that kind of like the lineage of Björk changing, you know, hear Iceland changing, and I liked what she was doing. So yeah, that made me curious. And then everyone we ran into seemed to be a musician of some kind.
It is kind of a, they seem to be fostering the arts like nobody's business. When you go, I mean, one of the things that's so arresting about your music is just the immediacy. It is just your beautiful voice and guitars usually. So when you're thinking about a recording studio, I'm curious, is it that it's changed? Your needs probably aren't that crazy in terms of microphones and everything. Right. Is it more the mood that you'll be in when you're recording there, or the people you're surrounded with? Like, what's the thought process there?
It's definitely the people. Number one. So I made sure to bring my kind of comfort zone, which was Jim Elkington and Nathan, just in case. I feel like if we could go anywhere and make a record together, it would not sound bad.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the backup. And then I'd seen there were two, we also recorded in this like third story, like stucco ancient building called Idno. That was the studio there. So we recorded in two different spaces that have like entirely different feels for different parts of the song. But the main tracks were done at Greenhouse. Sorry, this is all very important. But I guess to me, it's exciting to not know what the studio is going to be like exactly, you know?
Yeah.
Keeps the fresh kind of playful feeling in the process of recording. Whereas if I had like a home studio and I'm like cracked my knuckles and buckling down to do another one, you know, it would just get, that sounds boring to me, or at least not, not like you're going to anticipate recording in your house. And so you get really excited and write a bunch of cool songs. Like to me, that wouldn't happen. So I like having like a goal, you know, a place to take them.
Yeah. Do you do demos?
Yes. Yeah. Exchange some demos. Jim has the string arrangements on the records. There's some demos with his like synthesized strings, which are kind of crack me up. And then I also kind of love them.
So. Is it like an old Casio?
Yeah. With like a lot of reverb on the strings. It's pretty funny. When you let up on that, it's like really jarring. It's funny.
And then how far beyond the lack of the synth strings, like how far does the actual recording usually stray from those demos? Pretty far?
I think so. I mean, the women that we brought in, the sisters, I had them improvise. Each one of them joined one other song that we didn't have anything written for. So there's a, you know, we got to interact musically. But they did play true to the arrangements Jim had. It's just like when you get into things like vibrato that came from a demo where the strings, like the Casio string vibrato, was so tight and humanly impossible that like once you get in there and you realize these two have to do it and synchronize their, you know, their vibratos, or it's going to be phasey or something, like that's, you know, it's challenging.
Yeah.
It's really more human.
Yeah. And what do you bring guitar-wise on this journey?
I just brought my Collings, and that was, you know, because you get one thing to fly with. So I didn't bring a banjo, but that one's been so good to me. And just like, you know, it freaks me out to travel with it. But then someone one day was like, why not? You know, like, that's what this guitar is here for. You play, you know, play the hell out of it. And like, kind of cross your fingers was the thing. I got a good flight case. So it was given to me by my my cousin when our cousin passed away. And so it's kind of good energy for me to keep her in mind.
Yeah. What, I know we've talked about your Collings before, but for folks who don't know, describe it and how you found it.
So I don't deserve it.
Yes, you do.
It was given to me before I played like any guitar well, but it's really lovely finger style. Like if you, you know, it's fine for strumming things on, but it's really, I don't know, kind of a warm and buttery little finger style guitar. It's an OM. So small, I'm trying to think. Yeah, just it suits the size song I write, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah. And did Nathan take his Bourgeois or something else?
Yeah, he brought that. And he played the electrics that were there on a few songs. I can't remember what he played. He would remember. But yeah, he just brought his acoustic, his Bourgeois.
Yeah.
Bourgeois. I can't ever say that word.
One of the things that your press release talked about with this album is that you were heavily influenced by Lee Hazelwood's Cowboy in Sweden record. I'm just curious what that influence was like and where you went from with that record.
Right. That was kind of our joke, was that this was my Cowgirl in Iceland record.
Okay.
So I was listening to that record a lot because I love his laid-back delivery, like his vocal delivery.
Yeah.
But within that landscape that they made, it was very cinematic and, you know, over the top, not something that we would actually shoot for, but something about kind of the tone, the overall, like, the mix in mixing, kind of shooting for it again, and I just loved how free it was and kind of, it's almost like somebody talking to themselves sometimes, which is kind of my jam as well. But yeah, I just love those songs and how they don't have any, like Nashville number structures, very loose and wandering stuff, but also really fun. And we tried to have some fun, but it always comes back to quiet songs.
Yeah. And were you listening to this record while you were writing these songs or kind of after you'd written them and were thinking about how to record them?
Yeah. When we were working on, I'd written the songs, but in arranging them, kind of thinking about, you know, sometimes when I bring humming in, that was when I was almost imitating the things I was hearing, you know, when I would listen to some of the songs that I liked and then go back and do what I could to imitate it almost like a bad copy. I don't think it was, I wasn't actually going for the sound, but
what would lead
trying
you
to get to the nut, yeah, of what they were doing, and yeah, what would they do? We really maybe don't want to know.
put on a mustache, see what happens.
Make a short film with a mustache on.
What is your songwriting process like?
It is pretty. It starts with stream of consciousness and then recording that and a lot of editing to get the meaning out. And trying to get that kind of the first blush of something, like never turning away if something sounds weird or looks, you know, I can hear my like editing side say like, oh, that's not good. That's too saccharine, or that word is cliche or something. And I'll try to just keep pushing through it and let things kind of be and stop as soon as possible. That's kind of how I work.
Got it. And do you, I am only asking this because I moved out to the country and it's like kind of hard to balance when you know your plot of land always needs something addressed. How do you balance, I'm going to write a song versus I'm going to go run the tractor or whatever you need to do on a weekly basis?
Yeah, I tried. So Wendell Berry was 30 miles from my home, and he's a poet and essay writer who's just so great from Kentucky. He should be more well known, but sometimes I find that he hasn't gotten somewhere yet. But he writes about farming a lot and writes about writing. And one of his things he said was, like, he does half farming, half writing. Like, every day, his days are half and half. So I like that as a rule. That seems pretty good.
And do you carve out the first half of the day for farming or songwriting?
Songwriting. Yeah, I find waking up is a state, you know, who knows? If there was kids or something running around, I'd be lost. But or maybe not. But that first kind of fresh, unjudgmental brain, that's pretty soft and malleable. I like that state of mind. It's hard to go back there after a certain point in the day.
Yeah. And are you going to go on the road with this record?
Yeah, we'll be touring in the fall. We'll be over that way towards you. And going out with Jake Fussell for a while. So that'll be really fun. He's going to play bass with us, so I could see. You know Jake Fussell?
No.
Oh, gosh. He's an amazing guitar player. He has a saying on his last record. He's got a record out, and he's from Georgia. He lives in North Carolina now, in Durham, with all the cool kids. And he plays a lot of traditionals, rearranged and stuff, but he's just got this great setup with, like, an electric guitar and a pretty... just the blues junior, a little amp, and oh, so good. You got to have him out there.
We do. Yeah. Well, yeah. If he's going to be on the road when you come through Seattle.
He won't be on the West Coast, unfortunately.
He won't be.
That's
okay.
A bummer. Yeah. But maybe. Yeah. You know, he goes out there sometimes.
What else are you listening to these days besides Lee Hazlewood?
Oh, let's see. Summertime, I really like the Relatively Clean Rivers record.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And I'm checking out a few new people. Julia Jacklin, I really like her writing lately, her new record, I guess. I think, what am I listening to? Sometimes I get so, I don't want to say snobby, but I've, like, trained my ear to lyrics so much that I've kind of ruined my... I can't listen to a lot of things if the person hasn't considered lyrics as much as I have.
Okay.
And so I listen to a lot of international stuff, like a lot of Mexican ranchero stuff and languages I don't speak, so I can't be really critical.
That's probably smart. Does that mean that there are a ton of great songs that you just threw away because they didn't meet your high standard?
There are definitely, there's a definite trash can that's full at all times. But not because, I mean, there's parts I like about them, but just some that I don't need to share them. So, yeah.
Got it. Well, the record sounds incredible. I love it. And encourage everyone to check it out. It's like the river loves the sea. And it's on No Quarter. Is that right?
That's right.
All right. Any other words you want to share?
Oh, I will say that the title comes from a Cy Khan lyric.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And that the song is actually, his song is called Like Butter Loves Bread. And another way of saying that within his song is, you know, like the river loves the sea. And I just really gravitated to that phrase when I was thinking about this record, even though I don't have it in any of the lyrics of the song.
You didn't cover the song.
So, I didn't cover the song, but I do recommend people listen to Cy Khan, and his records are pretty excellent.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Joan. As always, it's
Thank
been a blast
you.
Talking to you. Love your music.